Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. A good business solves problems. A good idea solves problems. A great startup really solves problems. But how do you go about doing that? That's the question that all business owners, startups, and entrepreneurs have been answering, hopefully effectively, since the history of problems. Someone has figured out a way to monetize them. And that's what we're going to talk about, solving problems using cutting-edge technology. I like talking about this stuff. Before we get into it and before I introduce today's subject matter expert, I do want to remind you that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Now, while you're checking out Fullscale, I also want you to go over to YouTube and check out Startup Hustle TV. That's right. We launched our own TV show. It's a show about startups, and the show is a startup. So come watch us try and figure all of that out. With me today, I've got Rohan Gupta, and his company is on Startup Hustle's list of top Chicago startups. He is the CEO, and I'm assuming the founder, of Quillbot. Rohan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
I appreciate it. And I like to say that no one tells the story of a company and the problem they solve more than the CEO and founder himself. So why don't you give us a little bit of backstory about you and tell us what problem you're solving over at Quillbot?
Yeah. We have a very cliche story here, but founded Quillbot with my good friend back in college. I was doing my master's in computer science at UIUC. He was in the process of dropping out of computer science at UIUC. Figured out a hack to basically rewrite sentences and figured out that the broader market, no one's really doing anything like that. And so scraped together, like a Google Translate style MVP in literally a week, posted on Reddit and just took off. The first Reddit post got over 1,000 upvotes. And, a couple years later, we had over a million monthly active users, went out, raised venture capital. Now we have over four and a half million monthly active users. And basically what we're building is an AI writing platform. So leveraging cutting edge AI to basically automate and augment as much of the writing process as we can.
So, I mentioned this off the air, but for those of you listening, Quillbot was after we do our top city and we talk about their startups, we talk about which one we like the most, and Quillbot was my choice. Why? Oh, first off, there's a link in the show notes for Quillbot. So, what is a quill? It's a feather, and you use it for writing. Quillbot.com. Check it out. It's cool stuff, but I like it because I've written three books, man. And I am a practitioner of the written and spoken word. And I have a big appreciation for anything that makes that easier, whether it's Grammarly or Quillbot or the little red squiggles that tell you you're about to look like an idiot with whatever you're writing. So I think that you may have downplayed the tech here because this is an AI-based tool. And we're solving problems with complex and high tech. So let's talk a little bit about that. Like, I mean, first off, where does the AI component come into this? Like, what does that even mean? And please speak to us as if we're small children or maybe like a Labrador Retriever or something so we can understand it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the AI behind our technology or our website is basically able to actually understand the meaning of your sentences and rewrite the sentences with that understanding. So it can actually interpret metaphors, you know, it can interpret idioms, things like that in ways that, you know, traditional grammar correction technology just simply can't do. And we, on a roadmap, have the have products that can actually generate language for you. Based off of, you know, your prior prior sentences, et cetera. So think about it like Gmail autocomplete on steroids. You know, we have technology that can go and help you conduct research, help you summarize research. So we can actually generate, you know, like a paragraph for a full 3-4 page article that you throw into our website. And so in order for the technology to do this, it actually needs a very good understanding of the world, you know, so it needs to understand like the differences between colors, for example. It needs to understand that, you know, an elephant is bigger than a suitcase because there's so many nuances in your language, and that real world understanding helps inform the AI on how best to communicate those concepts. And so our AI model has, you know, read vast amounts of the internet, including all of Wikipedia and a lot of news and things like that. So it actually has an understanding of real world events as well. With sort of subtle prompting, you can actually see that in the AI model where it may generalize like the location. So like Chicago, it could say like, it's, you know, city in Illinois, the biggest city in Illinois, something like that, for example.
So we talk about solving a problem with, you know, cutting edge tech. The problem with cutting edge tech is there isn't always a lot of people that understand how the hell it works. I mean, I think that's fair to say, right? I mean, just like, I mean, it's cutting edge for a reason because it's new. And with that, wild experimentation sometimes occurs. By the way, Quillbot sounds quite worldly. I think if you went to any dinner party with Quillbot, you would be able to have a very informed conversation. And imagine reading all of Wikipedia. I was actually watching a show on the History Channel where that was one of the things they uploaded to something they dropped on the moon to like ensure that the future of history was recorded. And they said, yeah, and it had all of Wikipedia in it. It's kind of a lot. So when it comes, all right. So the idea of rewriting a sentence sounds simple until you think about it. And then there's literally, I would imagine, an infinite number of combinations. Like maybe it is finite, but it sure doesn't seem or feel finite. When it comes to solving a problem with something cutting edge and you don't even know what it does or how to do it, or like, what's the simplistic approach to how to just
start? Sorry, could you repeat that? Cut out.
How do you start? Like when it, because, you know, you look at a problem and you're using cutting edge tech. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, the square one can't be it. Maybe it is. Oh, well, we'll just have it read Wikipedia. But yeah. Like, I mean, where do you begin?
Yeah, this was actually very interesting because AI has been going through sort of paradigm shift after paradigm shift, and it's becoming increasingly more advanced. You know, when we started, we had, you know, formal training, and we were all computer, you know, software engineers, computer science majors. I was doing my master's And we took, you know, AI NLP classes, but we just learned on the internet, really. And we played around and experimented, and we had a user base that we could just constantly iterate with. So we would deploy new AI models and get user feedback and just constantly iterate from there. But it's becoming increasingly accessible. So the big cloud providers like Google, and then they actually built this software layer that made training AI models very easy. So there's like software packages like PyTorch and TensorFlow that just make training AI models far more accessible to, you know, college students, et cetera. You know, we were really working on technology that very few people were, and it's just because we were able to stand on the shoulder of giants, really, you know, Google and Facebook, basically.
I often say, what's easier, climbing the mountain alone or asking those on top to pull you up? Yeah. And that's the key, because you're not going to, as a startup especially, you're not going to outclass Google. I mean, come on, you know, like, someone else is doing these things out there. So basically you Googled it. Yeah. and began to figure it out, which I've learned, I think, everything that I know that's useful off of Google. I mean, how to be an entrepreneur, how to build a business, how to do shit every single day. Google it, people. It's a golden world of information. So when it comes to like AI, and I think that people really misunderstand like what it is. In the most simplistic way, how do you begin to know if AI is even something that can solve your problem or if it's a good fit?
If there's like a pattern to what you're trying to solve, you know, I'm sort of in the bucket of thinking that AI can solve most problems, you know, at this point. If it's entirely if it's entirely digital, I think AI is pretty compelling. You know, you see things start to break down a bit when you need like a robotics layer attached to it, but you know, even with self-driving cars and things like that, I think AI is going to go through an evolution in the next 3 to 5 years, where we'll start to see it do just phenomenal things that people thought were impossible earlier. I think the best way to describe it is pattern recognition.
Sure. And, you know, when you're reading all of Wikipedia, I'm sure that's the thing when it comes to AI and all that is its ability. Well, I have a list of some of the advantages of AI. Well, it's available 24/7. It can process more information. Well, at least it can account for more of it than a human brain, and it can run a gazillion scenarios enough times that it's like, oh, okay. So that will work where you're kind of, you know, I looked at, you know, I've been watching, I don't know, I'm fascinated with space and science. And you look at like in the 60s, they're like using a slide rule at NASA, down in Houston. They're like, hang on, let me do the calculation. And then, you know, you have AI predicting planetary alignments and just doing all kinds of crazy stuff. When it comes to the advantages of solving problems, the pattern recognition is one thing. What are some other common uses of AI for solving real world problems?
You know, I think like recently DeepMind effectively solved protein folding, which is going to completely change medicine using AI. And I think
what is that?
So protein folding is the ability to predict the structure of a protein based off of its amino acids. It's basically earlier was thought to be intractable computationally. It's actually will completely change medicine in the next 5 to 10 years. It'll make pharmaceuticals far easier to research and develop, basically leading to like an era of precision medicine, you know, decreasing the cost, increasing the accessibility, things like that. You know, I think computer vision and like self-driving cars, a lot of that stuff is going to be phenomenal. But, you know, where we really play is natural language processing and the models that we're seeing right now are kind of scary, but very exciting at the same time. So, you know, we're seeing models that can just generate a full article that can answer any question that you give it based off of just what it's read on the internet. You know, I think, like, for example, translation has been sort of a precursor here. And I think AI is basically going to remove a lot of the language barriers that we've historically faced. We're seeing applications such as, you know, in the era of Zoom calls being the norm, AIs that can take notes, you know, on that Zoom call, and sort of just like a layer of cognition in your day-to-day interactions with someone, and having like a virtual assistant there to take notes, follow up on emails, things like that. I think we'll start to see a lot of that in the next 2 years.
So when it comes to Quillbot, and once again, if you're listening, go check it out. It's pretty cool. You can right there on the homepage kind of mess around with it and see what it spits out. And so when it comes to creating content and writing, well, that's a challenge because, you know, over the years, as I've watched this kind of platform and these things develop, oh man, a couple years ago, like you couldn't, it was difficult that maybe even early in Quillbot's phase, you put it in, you're like, ugh. You know, it was close, but it was like, eh. And if you have to spend a bunch of time editing, then it kind of, it begins to depreciate the value of the efficiency it's attempting to provide. So yeah. With a million users, I would imagine that that's more data sets and more stuff to analyze and look at, but how do you train it to know if it's right or wrong?
So we actually use our users to basically evaluate the models for us. And so, you know, they're our testers, basically. So we'll roll out a new AI model. And if we notice higher engagement, higher basically acceptance of the outputs, we know we've done a better job. But, you know, I think... a lot of the innovation we've seen have come in just major leaps where we've just seen models that are more cognitively superior to the prior models, right? They start to have a better real world understanding. They start to become more fluent, more clever, you know, and we can just see that after, you know, training the model and playing with it a little bit. And then, you know, we know it'll do well when we roll it out to production. So
that is, it is largely user-based feedback of saying, yes, this is good. No, it's not.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that's the part, like, with, you know, everyone, our running joke when TechCrunch was still a live event, would, you know, you go around and talk to everyone's like, my machine learning algorithm. And you're like, okay, look, everybody doesn't have a machine learning algorithm. Some people do and some people don't. But the thing is the machine can't begin to learn unless it has some understanding of whether it's right or wrong. Otherwise, it's like, you know, you look back, and I'm old enough to remember the movie War Games with Matthew Broderick. And, you know, they had that computer Whopper that was just playing checkers and chess all day. And it was learning how to have strategy. And, yeah. You know, and in many, but the thing is if the machine doesn't know, it doesn't know what a win looks like until something says it. So is that high level of user engagement, does that just rapidly accelerate the arrival at solutions and the quality of the solution?
Yeah. I mean, that tells us if we're on the right track. You know, how the AI learns is through training data. And so basically we have, you know, 100,000 examples of sentences and, you know, paraphrases of the sentence. And so the AI starts to pick that up. And every time it predicts a word wrong, we sort of adjust the AI to predict the word correctly, you know. And then pretty soon by the end of the 100,000 sentences, it's learned how to rewrite sentences pretty effectively. Prior to that 100,000 sentences, we do what's called language modeling or pre-training. And so that's where it reads Wikipedia, and that's where it reads news and basically half the internet. And what it does is, depending on what specifically we're trying to do, it basically just does next word prediction. So you give it a sentence and have it predict the next word in Wikipedia, you know, or the next word given the prior context. And it just does this, you know, millions and billions of times until it has read the whole internet and can actually predict the next sentence, you know, or the next word of a Wikipedia article or anything like that. And so not only does it learn how to, you know, write in English, it also learns the real world concepts too.
So, and this is, I'm just curious on this one. So is the content, is it unique each time or is it, does it repeat itself?
On our site.
Yeah. I'm just curious. Like when it's, if it's rewriting something, is that considered unique content or is it, cause I know things like Google and whatever that, well, they hate duplicate stuff.
Yeah.
And you also like you, there's plagiarism, you know, like clearly that I would think that that would be something that Quillbot would want to avoid.
Yep. Yeah. So we can write a given sentence many different ways, like 10 plus ways, you know, 12 plus ways. I would say that we encourage our users to only use it as a creative tool for their own writing, you know, and so they put in their own language and it really touches it up. Again, think about it like a Photoshop for sentences, right? But the deeper products that we're looking to build will do things like auto cite, external research, things like that. So we don't encourage, we actually prevent plagiarism.
So, and like I said, as an author of three books and dealing with the manual process, I can literally right now hear my editor in the back of my head saying, there's an echo here. You said, and he'll give you a list. He'll be like, you said this exact phrase on these 10 pages and it starts to begin to sound like an echo. I mean, are those also things that Quillbot, it will it tell me that?
Yeah. So our deeper product that we're looking to build will certainly do things like that. It can show you how formal each sentence is relative to one another. So if you're, you know, one sentence is kind of off from the normal voice of your written work, it can identify that and actually provide a rewrite for that. So it matches the voice of the rest of your paper, your book, or whatever you're writing. So yeah,
which is hard to do as a writer, because when you start getting other people's hands in it, editors and whatever, it can, things can sound out of place. All right. So once again, today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. And let's talk about that for a second. So part of solving complex problems, as we identified at the beginning of the episode, is that what with cutting edge or emerging technology, as I refer to it, you don't have a lot of people that have experience with it. How do you deal with that when it comes to, you know, you've got a venture backed product and, you know, venture capitalists aren't exactly known for patience. And then there's a real competitive world out there for developers, especially here in the US. So how have you gone about solving the problem of not having enough people to potentially work on it?
Yeah, you know, it's you have to pick up a lot of the slack yourself at the end of the day, you know, co-founders and yourself. Recruiting is tough, you know, finding really good people who are both cultural fits, sort of there for the long run. And have really the domain expertise to build what you're looking to build, especially in NLP and AI. You know, we interview folks all the time who have PhDs who've been in the space for 20 years, but the space is moving so quickly where if they haven't been working on the cutting edge stuff in the last 1 or 2 years, their prior 20 years of experience literally means nothing. Yeah, and so. The talent pool really is only folks at Google, Facebook, you know, OpenAI, places like that, and those companies have a death grip, you know, on that.
Well, it's because it's hard to find people to do it. Yeah. By the way, those of you are wondering, NLP, natural language processing. Yeah. And that is, well, that's, you guys are in the business of NLP. I mean, kind of through and through, right? So,
yeah.
Okay. So as a startup, what's your path to revenue here? Like, how do you monetize this product? How do you have revenue?
Yeah. So we are a normal like SaaS B2C product. So we have a freemium model where we have a free, you know, platform that anyone can use, very accessible. You don't even have to log in to use it. And then we have a premium product where we can take sentences and rewrite them to be longer, to be shorter, to be more formal or more casual, things like that. We charge folks about $15 a month for that premium service. And so we're doing decently well. We can't say the revenue number, but a few million in ARR.
That's fine. Yeah. So, okay. So as for now, so, you know, when it comes to like a product roadmap, you talk about some things you want to do in future iterations and all of that. Like, I mean, what's the future of Quillbot? Like, what are you going to be doing in 3 years? Where is all this technology taking us, especially your product, in 5 years?
I mean, I think in like 1 year increments, so it's kind of hard to predict.
I can appreciate that. So
what I'll say.
Let me rephrase. Where are we 1 year from today? Like, what do you expect to be doing now then that you're not doing now?
Yeah. So we're going to be building out a full AI co-writer over the next year. And actually we're almost done with the beta version of the product. And the AI will basically, it's an AI first word processor, basically, where the AI is sitting with users every step of their writing journey. And so we help users conduct research. We help them auto-cite stuff. We help them actually summarize the research, generate language, paraphrase. Basically, every single step of the writing workflow, we'll have the latest cutting-edge technology to help users.
Do you do anything around like actually speaking to Quillbot?
So we've had a lot of requests for like an Alexa skill and things like that. We haven't built anything yet. If I think we see a compelling use case, we will. Most of our users
I published two books and that came out 3 months apart from each other. Now I'd spent 6 months prior to that writing them. But part of the way that I sped it up, and this was years ago, and there, you know, this was before you even founded your company, and just literally dictating, you know, talking and trying to keep your voice in it. And it was a great place to start when it came. But, you know, there weren't many things that could recognize my voice. Like it would, I don't know, you'd upload it to some platform that said that it could recognize and put it on the page for you. And, you know, like next you do it and it'd be like, Betty White makes pancakes for all of her friends in the neighborhood. And you're like, I didn't even say anything close to that. Yeah. So yeah, but with that, you know, found, I did have writing assistants and an editor that would sometimes listen to that and, you know, help transcribe it. Everyone that's written a book knows that the best part about writing a book is finishing it. Just meaning like you get it. It's like giving birth to a child in many ways. It's a lot more work. Well, at least writing a good one, writing one that is structurally sound and isn't just thrown together with a bunch of stuff. And I love the idea of the AI co-writer. Like that's legit. I'm into that. So we've been talking a lot about AI as cutting edge technology, and it's, you know, solving problems with it. Like, what's AI like? Some of the disadvantages. Well, it's expensive to create, or it can be.
Yeah.
Is that a roadblock that we're going to run into solving problems with cutting edge stuff?
It's getting better. I think cost is definitely a roadblock right now, but I don't think it will be in 12 months. What I would say is, you know, AI is really a black box, at least a lot of what we're seeing right now. And so for that reason, you actually don't know what the AI is really doing oftentimes. And you find yourself having to like sort of explain it, even though it is sort of acting by itself. And another consequence of that, something that we face heavily, is bias in your training data and bias in the AI models. And so occasionally what we'll see, especially because we're doing paraphrasing, we'll see the AI write something to be a little offensive or sometimes really offensive. had obviously no intention of doing that, but because it read half the internet, it picked up all of these biases that are really hard to train out of it. And so, you know, everyone sort of in the space, including the big players like Facebook and Google, are spending a lot of energy trying to figure out how to remove the bias from these language models, these AI models.
I chuckled a little bit when you say that, because I think about the things that had, well, I remember there was something with Twitter and, you know, it became biased so quickly. They turned it off within like hours. Because it literally, and this is terrible, but at the same time, you're like, what? I mean, it like became hateful and racist, basically, you know, and it was just because the people people are the problem in this regard. They saw it and I wonder what I can get this thing to say. So they started tweeting at it like really shitty things, and it learned pretty quickly, oh, maybe this is the way we communicate. And, you know, I think that's where people get scared of things like AI. And does it scare you when it comes to that stuff?
Yeah, you know, so that's Microsoft Tay, and they did what's called active learning, which is the AI is actually learning as it's being deployed in production. And so users can actually influence the AI and poison the AI. We don't do that because we learned from Microsoft from there. And then so we hand curate our data sets that we train our models with. And so we prevent a lot of that. But we, you know, bias definitely seeps in from all the pre-training that we do. And I think when you have AIs making like decisions, for example, so this is really common. AI is being used a lot in HR. Right, to screen resumes, to do things like that, and language generation. You know, anytime an AI is making a decision and bias is present, it has the possibility of making that bias systematic in the decision making. You know, and I think that could be very toxic.
Yeah, on my list of disadvantages, it doesn't have emotions. Yeah. And, you know, that's part of that, you know, lacking empathy, which I believe in Star Trek, the Next Generation was like the ultimate step for Data. The robot was like the empathy chip, you know, like, and, you know, that's, I mean, on some levels, we're probably getting close to being able to do that on some levels, but you got to have, but once again, something has to train it. And, do you think that the inherent bias that people have in general, like, because I don't care who you are, you have some kind of bias, like we all do. It's just kind of the way it works. It could have been generated from any number of things that we don't even need to talk about right now, but you have some bias. You like things or you don't. And that inherent input to train a model, well, it kind of lives with it. So one of the things you mentioned earlier was untraining AI. Is that hard to do?
Yeah, that's very hard to do because, you know, you can get the like most egregious examples of bias, but the whole point of these AI models is they can kind of generalize, you know, and they can address novel situations, things like that. And so getting full coverage there is pretty hard. And then, you know, all what's sort of considered offensive evolves over time. I'm not saying like month to month, but decade to decade. So something that we didn't even realize, but for example, the spelling of Kiev in Ukraine can be, depending on how you spell it, could be considered offensive to some Ukrainians. And we didn't even know that. And our model picked up the offensive version of that. And so sort of having the awareness of you know, what's generally acceptable versus not, you know, and sort of balancing the current political situations or cultural, you know, situations is tricky. You know?
So when it comes to solving problems, technically on many levels, AI is giving you suggestions.
Yeah.
Or at least that's a better way to look at it until you feel pretty darn confident about it. I think that's what freaks people out is like when and where. Another thing that people seem to be scared about is this going to replace us and make us all unemployed? I mean, overall, this kind of automation and stuff like that is usually doing things that people don't want to do. is what I found. Then they're not happy doing it. Any type of automation is just doing literally that. It's automating a repetitive task that makes your back or your mind or your psyche or your general psyche kind of hurt, you know? So what are your thoughts on that? Is like, do you think that AI and emerging technology simply just take the place of things that people didn't want to do anyway, or is it a real threat to people's employment?
I think it's definitely a threat to people's employment. I think it's likely still good for overall productivity. It'll improve everyone's standard of living. But I think a lot of people sort of construct their identity based around their jobs and things like that. And so, you know, I think self-driving cars can very quickly automate a ton of jobs there. You know, what we're doing can automate a lot of writing. But that being said, people listen to your podcast for your unique viewpoint, for my viewpoint, you know, on the world, and the AI can't do that, right? And so the AI is actually reducing the barrier for you to communicate your viewpoints to the world. And so in some ways, it can actually democratize, writing for, like, let's say, non-native speakers of English, things like that, or folks who have very compelling viewpoints, but just don't want to put in the work of, you know, fully writing a book, end to end to do that, to communicate that. And so I think in some ways it could be really rewarding for people, and it can sort of be the building blocks they need. So like, think about a calculator, right? A calculator can make an accountant's job much easier, but in that, you may need fewer accountants because they spend less time doing more mundane tasks of accountancy. So
that's just general business evolution, if you ask me. You know, like every business I've owned, operated, and grown over the years has become more efficient along the way, been able to do twice the volume with the same number of people. Or if you're not getting better, you are getting worse. And that is real, people. Part of it, now, what about just like general productivity hacks?
I think like AI is going to revolutionize productivity sort of across the board. And I think it's like sort of the ultimate productivity hack. So,
I find that people overwhelmingly hate writing, dude. Like they do. Like, I mean, I talk to founders and people all the time and they're like, dude, you've written 3 books, you've published thousands of blogs, and we have over a decade. They're like, how do you do it? I'm like, we sit down and we write.
Yeah.
You know, because that was the way we did it. And they're like, oh, how do you do that? And I'm like, you do it whether you like it or not. If you want to achieve a desired outcome, you go through whatever process it is that you need to do. Now, if there's things that make that better, faster, or cheaper, yes, we explore them. But man, it is just unbelievable how many people are afraid to write. And I think that stuff like QuillBot is what I would like to think really helps improve the confidence. And, I know this is different, like Grammarly, for example. I don't know if you like or don't like Grammarly. I don't know if that's a competitor or not, but Grammarly, their little free plugin, probably stops millions of people a day from sounding like idiots. And on that level alone, we should thank them. You know, and that's the thing is that backup, that confidence. And I think that that's where your product is putting people. And another thing too, is some, you know, so I spend a lot of time thinking about, I call it fact shaping. And there's much like there's a zillion ways to say anything, which means some of them have to be way better than others. So how are you shaping the facts around the message that you're trying to deliver? Because you look at words like affordable or cheap, many people will bundle them to they are received in dramatically different values. Like when you think of the word cheap, you think flimsy, disposable, it's going to break easily. Affordable, that's got value. So, you know, some of that is people just don't inherently understand that. And I think that, I don't know, maybe they're not. I really don't know how to explain the why around that, but at the same time, so with QuillBot, is there any, do you begin to look at things like what I referred to as fact shaping. Like some of these words are way more effective than others.
So there's two parts to this. One is like fully understanding the context and what the user is trying to convey. And that's kind of hard to do sometimes, but we try to do our best, and that's getting better and better over time. But sometimes the AI has to infer that and make sort of an educated guess based on what the user is trying to say and how well it'll be received. And the second half is making sure, you know, all those subtleties of English language are properly trained into the model. And so we have linguists and a whole team that reviews each, training pair to make sure that, you know, that subtlety is properly communicated to the model so it can pick that up. And then these AI models are so, you know, large and smart that they can sort of generalize those 10,000 examples up and actually do it very well at scale. You're sort of talking about another thing, which we spend a lot of time thinking about, which is called linguistic style transfer. So, like, for example, taking a casual sentence and making it more formal. You can do it. You can take a normal sentence and make it like Shakespearean, for example. So you can have, we call these modes, but we can have like a polite mode, a simple mode. You know, we have a formal mode that makes all of your sentences formal. And so the user can sort of opt into a specific type of writing that they like to convey. And I think that resolves a lot of the problems you're talking about, too.
And that's actually what I'm talking about, like that confidence to like, how do I sound a little smarter here? All right, Rohan, let's get the listeners really fired up, because this is probably what we'll get a bunch of comments for. Does Quillbot support or deny support of the Oxford comma?
Oh, not the right person, because we have like linguists in house who be like fake comma now. Like, oh no, I can't believe you said that.
You don't even need to answer that, man. I just think it's funny. Every now and then when I want to get people stirred up on Facebook, I'll just let them know that I'm a firm supporter of using the Oxford comma for reasons that are solely based around other people getting pissed off about my support of it. So like, I could really give a shit either way, but yeah, it's amazing the stuff that people decide to get excited about and defend vehemently. But the and does the same thing as the comma. I know, but Vampire Weekend wrote a song about the Oxford comma. So I didn't even know what it was until that damn song came out. All right. So Once again, with me today, Rohan Gupta, the CEO and founder of Quillbot, Quillbot.com. Link in the show notes. Go check it out. Like, it's going to make you smarter. It's going to make you at least sound smarter, and that I'll verify. So I end my episodes with Startup Hustle. I say my episodes because I'm not the only host. Make sure to tune in on Tuesdays, where you can learn a lot about e-commerce and Amazon from Andrew Morgans. Tune in on Thursdays with Innovate, her founder, Lauren Conaway. And she talks about a lot of stuff too. I can't even put her shows in a box, because she addresses so many different matters. If you haven't had enough of Startup Hustle by then, make sure to come visit and see what we're doing on Startup Hustle TV. We're figuring it out, people. We're figuring it out. Rohan, don't ever start your own TV show. It's a bad idea. It's a lot of work. It's not a bad idea. It's just a lot of work. So, you know, as we round out an episode of Startup Hustle that's brought to you by Fullscale.io, what advice, like, what do you want to say to the founders of the world on the way out? Maybe we should ask Quillbot and let it formulate an answer. But what do you want to say to, like, what's the advice you can give on the subject of solving problems with cutting edge stuff?
You don't need to be brilliant to do it. You just need to be like clever and creative. I think the applications of cutting edge all the building blocks are there. So just creatively applying them is all it really takes.
I love that. I would rather be clever than anything else. I think as an entrepreneur, being clever is way more valuable than being smart. Like, because clever trust me, you look at the people that have done the best as entrepreneurs and founders, and they do clever things. Yeah, they're smart too, but clever is is a different level of utility overall. I think that, you know, and my freestyle on the way out, I mean, first off, there's that. Also, you know, Google it, people. Like, there's never been more everything out there for free than right now. And tomorrow there'll be more out there than there was today. And you can, I mean, man, I've learned how to do the craziest stuff on Google, figuring out that it's even possible. You get to pursue other things. It doesn't mean that you always find your answer right there in the search results, but it'll give you ideas. It'll help you find clever solutions. It'll guide you to the people and whatever it is that might be out there. I mean, and you know what, if it's not on Google, then go over to YouTube. Also yeah. owned by Google, and maybe someone else is doing it there. It's out there. It's just a matter of where you're going to look for it. And you don't need Quillbot for that. You do not need Quillbot to read all of Google to help you find an answer. But I do hope you go sign up for it. It's cool, man. I like it. I like what you're building. I like what you've built. So keep building it, man. I'll catch up with you down the road.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Matt.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.